You are listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We have tons of archives for you. And Robert takes all the commercials out, and so you can listen to them in record time if you'd like to. They're MP3 files. You can download them and use them as you see fit. Our goal was to kind of make an educational audio archive for people. And each program also has a web page connected to it with all the information about our guests. So there you go, a little promo, I guess, for how to utilize the show. And if you have people who, I don't know, they're doing other stuff on Sunday, that's fine. We have a lot of listeners on Wednesday. Go figure.
Wednesday must be a big stay-home day.
I don't know what goes on Wednesday, but a lot of people listen on Wednesday. Yeah. And probably have as many listeners outside the country as we do inside the country. So it's obviously not a local thing. Anyway, today we're here visiting with Lauren Spivak. We have him in studio every couple of years when he circles around the country. He's considered the free market warrior and travels around the country educating people. We should, before we kind of launch into our socialism thing, Lauren, tell people about your seminars, because you do all of these at no charge. And I know there are groups out there of people in, you know, could be any kind of a group who needs a great speaker, and if they plan ahead, maybe you can catch them on your travels.
Sure. Well, I just did my last seminar over the weekend in Grass Valley, California. And I mean, I do shorter talks also. I don't want to give people the impression that they have to do the whole 7 hours or I'm not coming. I do shorter talks on particular economic topics, but one of my I guess most successful products, if that's the right term, is a seminar called Economic Literacy, which I have now delivered over 300 times in 28 states. And it is basically a class. What I tell people is that it's like a bachelor's degree in economics, only $50,000 cheaper. We go through economics from a capitalist perspective, and we explain why socialism doesn't work and how capitalism does what it does and why freedom is the only system. And this, you cannot emphasize this enough. There is no alternative. It is the only system ever even dreamt of by anybody that causes mass prosperity. You know, any system will put the guy on top in prosperity, okay? You know, Mao Zedong and Stalin, you know, are eating, you know, fine cuisine while their country is starving. And that's always the case. The guy on top, you know, is always in good shape in whatever country it is, okay? You know, Zimbabwe is probably the poorest country in the world, and Robert Mugabe lives the life of luxury, you know, as its dictatorial leader. But the only system ever devised by man, or even not devised by man, ever thought of, that causes mass prosperity, that causes everybody to get way, 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 way more prosperous. We are, by the way, somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000% more prosperous than we were 200 years ago. That's capitalism. And so I help people understand what the logic is and how it works, and then we apply and how to apply it to different issues facing our country today, how to think about taxes and education and healthcare in a free market sort of way. Mm-hmm. That's what I do. As you said, I do it all over the country.
Well, let me ask you this. I'll just give you my personal feelings, my personal viewpoint.
Are you in your safe space right now?
I am in my safe space.
So we can talk about your feelings?
You can't touch me. I personally think that you should have free health care. I think that's every person's right. I think you should get a free education. I think you should have a living wage.
I always like that one.
Yeah, you should have a living wage.
Depends on where you live, huh?
And if I don't want to work, I shouldn't have to work. I should be able to kick back and free cable. I should get free cable.
Free cable. That's a human right.
But all these other people should work for you.
Well, they can work for whoever they want. I'm just telling you what I want. I don't really care what they do, but does that make me a socialist?
It sounds pretty much like it does.
Oh, man.
No
wonder I don't have any friends.
But they do have friends. That's the problem.
If you'll forgive me for pointing out the obvious, you know, things can only be free if nobody has to make them. You know, the sky is free, okay, because
Good
that's
point.
Just there.
Yeah.
But anything that has to be made by anybody else cannot be free unless they're a slave. Because, mm-hmm. because you know, if you're entitled to something other people make, then what are they entitled to?
So you're saying my free cell phone wasn't free?
Yeah, I'm saying that kind of freedom, free stuff, as opposed to what freedom actually means, which is being left alone, is never free and is inevitably predicated on exploiting other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you can't get, you know, it wasn't there. I mean, did people 500 years ago have a right, you know, to get an MRI? Mm-hmm. Well, they couldn't because there was no MRI. So does the guy who invented the MRI, you know, does he have any rights in this?
Yeah.
You know, if somebody tomorrow is going to come up with a cure for cancer, do you have a right to that cure for free as soon as he's got it?
Right.
And because if you do, he's not inventing it.
It kind of stifles innovation, doesn't it?
It brings it to an absolute dead end, which is what we've observed in Cuba and Venezuela and the Soviet Union, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I guess I don't understand why people don't see that. Well, you know,
let's go through our little things and maybe we can help them.
Okay, let's start.
Okay, so the future. That was the first. That was your first topic. The future. We can't predict it.
Well,
and so that's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, humans are all about the future. I mean, we think about it and talk about it all the time, but we can't know for sure. We try to guess. In fact, a big chunk of what happens in a capitalist economy is people guessing the future. I mean, if I'm investing in the stock market, that's what I'm doing. Hmm. If I'm buying a house, if I'm training for a job, you know, you ask young people in college, let's say, what jobs they're pursuing, they'll tell you they're reading articles about how this particular career, that's the future, that's where the economy is going. We think about this all the time, but we don't know for sure. And the problem, there's a reason, and let me just emphasize as a side note here, that none of this is predicated on the socialist leaders being bad. Because the socialists, you asked me before, this what the socialists would say about all the failures in the past, and what they'll say is, well, they were bad. But we're good, mm-hmm. so
we learned from them.
That's right. We
so
good
our socialism will work.
So I'm explaining why. Even if your socialist leader is an absolute saint, and Friedrich Hayek does a really good job of explaining why he's very unlikely to be a saint. But I'll give you that one. We'll assume that he's a total saint and only wants goodness for everybody. It still doesn't work because how does he predict the future? When the socialists come to power, they simply look at what already has been created by the capitalists. You know what's already there, and divvies it up, you know, amongst the people that he thinks should be running things, and figures out who's been doing what. But he has no way to know what's going to come next.
Right. 10 minutes later, everything changes, and somebody's not happy.
That's right. I mean, back in the '80s, were you waiting for your smartphone? You didn't even imagine a smartphone.
Right.
Okay. I had trouble imagining it when I first saw it. Nobody no socialist leader says, "Oh well, look at that. It's time for the smartphone to show up." So now we got to put somebody in charge of it, and so they tend to stay. Stagnate because you've got one person thinking about it. Capitalism works because it's not one person's vision imposed on everybody else. It is literally billions of individual human beings, each with their own vision. And someone's imagining a smartphone. And by the way, there's a thousand other people imagining things that never happened and never worked.
Right.
You don't know which is the... It's not like everyone's imagination is right. More of them are wrong than right. But the only way to figure out that it's time for a smartphone is that somebody has the imagination to make that happen and it catches on, and then we have it. And it is inevitable that socialist countries stagnate, particularly if the entire world as socialist, which is pretty much their vision. Okay, you see, the Soviet Union got first television and then color television. Why? Because we had it. See, we had television. The Soviet government could say, well, those Western capitalists have television. Go to Kmart, buy a television, get it back to the Soviet Union, and let's figure out how it works, and then we'll have a television, too. Seriously, do you think that there ever would have to this day, if the Soviet Union's wish had come true and communism dominated the entire world, do you think to this day they would have had television?
Yeah, they would have had people sitting around thinking of ways to make life easier for their population. They would have, you know, hey, let's give them something to do. You know, that doesn't happen.
You don't have think tanks in socialism.
Yeah, well, Stalin's idea of making life easier for his population is something I don't think you want to experience firsthand.
No.
That was some rough stuff on the way to making life easier.
Uh-huh.
That workers' paradise was paved with a lot of corpses. But so anyhow, so that's the problem with the future. Capitalism has a means of getting to the future, which is simply that nobody knows for sure. So everybody has their own visions, their own experiments, and the one who has the best ideas, you know, that's what takes over.
And you're rewarded for that.
Absolutely, you're rewarded, and then everyone adopts those better ideas. When anyone figures out how to do something better, you know, 6 months later, everyone's doing it that way.
And which spawns tens of thousands of other ideas off the original idea.
Sure.
And it just snowballs. And
And socialism, again, since socialism is actually not a particular fixed philosophy, which capitalism is, socialism is simply somebody's opinion, some one person's set of priorities imposed on everybody else, you inevitably go back to that traffic jam, where it's only what this one guy's mind could possibly do. Well, that's hugely limiting. I benefit every minute of every day from in various inventions and ideas that were dreamt up by millions and millions of different people.
Mm-hmm.
Socialism inevitably limits you to one, because, and it's by the way why socialists tend not to get along with each other once they get into power. They start killing each other off, like Trotsky and Stalin and, you know, all of that. Again, it's inevitable, because once you decide that the society has to have one set of ideas imposed upon it,
you got to get rid of the dissenters.
That's right. If you and I have a slightly different version of socialism, well, one of us has got to go, because this isn't, you know, there's only going to be one idea imposed on everybody else.
Right.
And frankly, if I even let you hang around after I've defeated,
huge threat.
Then you are standing there as a symbol that there might be another form of socialism that might be the better form of socialism. And when people have to wait in line for a week to get a roll of toilet paper, they might, you know, they might start saying, gee, maybe Aaron's version of socialism was better than Lauren's. I can't let that happen.
Yeah.
I got to get rid of you and make sure that everyone understands there's only one true. Look at North Korea. I mean, that's exactly what it is.
Yes.
You know,
you can't even allow your relatives to live.
That's right. In a free society, doesn't have to worry about that, because the government doesn't pretend to have the answer for everybody's life. But socialism, by its very nature, its whole point is that it's got the perfect way to run a society. And since that's pretty much impossible that anyone could ever have a perfect way to run a society, humans are not perfect, therefore the socialist has to exterminate. It's kind of like when there are two or three queen bees born in the same hive. You know, the one that comes out first kills the others. Because there only be one queen. Okay,
so right.
The queen bee's first job is to kill all the other queen bees.
Your North Korea analogy is perfect, because that's exactly what is happening there.
Look at Hillary setting herself up nicely for that.
And Hayek talks about this in Road to Serfdom. Died long before Kim Jong-un ever, you know, mm-hmm. came along. Because it's the inherent nature of socialism. Because it's not a set of principles, which is what capitalism is. Like, it's a principle that you're entitled to keep the fruit of your own labor. Okay, I would put that in the philosophy that I'm promulgating here. There are fixed principles that will never ever change. You are entitled to keep the fruit of your own labor. That is a fixed principle, and there is no circumstance whatsoever where I'm going to bend on that one.
I got a big problem with that.
It's true forever.
Socialist shill.
Whereas the socialists are saying, well, these guys need to get more, and those guys need to get less, and we got to slosh stuff for here and there. You may recall Elizabeth Warren, who is technically speaking my senator.
Pocahontas?
That's right. Pocahontas. She gave a speech a couple years ago called The 11 Principles of Liberalism, and it was a huge hit, by the way. Google that. You'll find 10,000 articles from the left-wing media praising her wonderful speech about the 11 Principles of Liberalism. And I read it, and you know what the most fascinating thing to me is? None of her 11 Principles of Liberalism are principles. They're not principles.
Really?
Nice.
They're not. Because the word principle actually means something. Principle means that it's something that applies all the time to everybody. And her principles include things like, you know, McDonald's workers ought to get paid more, and stockbrokers ought to get paid less. Well, that's not a principle, okay? That's like saying, you know, my My relatives ought to get paid more, and your relatives ought to get paid less.
You actually got it wrong. The Atlantic has it listed as Elizabeth Warren's 11 commandments of progressive.
Commandments.
You obviously are trying to sell her short.
All right,
we've got to take a quick break.
This is the next level that socialism
exactly.
goes to.
They've risen to commandment, and there are 11, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah, not 11 suggestions either. Interesting.
Listen to commandments.
God. We'll continue in this vein when we come right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart. Give a damn's busted. Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. Everything that's wonderful is what I feel when we're together. Brighter than a lucky penny. When you're near, the rain goes, disappears, dear, and I feel so fine. Just to know that you are mine. My life is sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows, that's how they shriek, rainbows, so come on, join in. Everybody, sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows, everything that's wonderful.
Ooh, unicorn. No unicorns? That's exactly where I was going. Who was that?
Wesley Gore.
From when?
1965.
Classic. It was at the end of the sunshine and lollipops era that you spoke of in the first hour.
Yeah.
Actually, right about when we all got nasty with each other.
And great music.
Always great music. Okay,
so she's not related to Al Gore. We need to debunk that.
It's a rumor. You heard it here first.
He thought so.
Exactly. So the future, we can't predict the future. The fact that we can't do that and the stifling of innovation and all that makes socialism untenable.
Yeah, the innovation is getting stifled because you have one person's vision imposed everywhere else. So again, that's what it is.
So let's do the greedy and lazy part.
Let's do greedy and lazy. Well, people are to some extent greedy and lazy. I mean, it's there's all kinds of individual variation.
They have this built in.
But it's built in.
Yeah.
And to say that you're going to pass a law in Congress, to outlaw greediness and laziness is pretty foolish. Although in one form or another, that's what socialists talk about, and that's what Karl Marx suggested. So capitalism has a way of dealing with this. It's got a mechanism, and I'll just point out that all good human institutions, what do human beings do? We make institutions. What do human institutions do? They take what you got and channel them in some kind of positive direction, okay? So, there's all kinds of good things and bad things about human beings. We're very complicated, and we're very mixed in our inclinations, and a good human institution takes the bad stuff and channels it in a good direction. Okay, an example that I often give is that marriage. What is marriage? It's a human institution that takes something that exists, which is the sex drive. Okay, it's there, and is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, it could be both. We can come up with plenty of examples where the sex drive leads into bad things, and plenty of times where it leads to good things. And it takes that and channels it into creating a stable environment in which to raise children. Okay, that's what marriage is, sociologically speaking. It's taking, instead of having the sex drive just running wild, it's channeled into creating a stable home, and now you can raise children, and it makes society work better that way. So another human institution is capitalism, which takes greed and turns into prosperity. If you're greedy, if all you care about is yourself, well, how in capitalism are you going to get ahead? And the answer is you got to serve others. If you come up with a product everyone wants to buy, if you come up with a more efficient way of bringing goods to market so that everyone can get their stuff cheaper and thus live at a higher standard of living, if you write a best-selling novel, if you cure a disease, I mean, we think of 100 different ways. that if you do something that helps others, then you will get the money that you want. So what capitalism does is it turns everybody who is inherently greedy into someone who is desperately looking for ways to serve their fellow man, which is actually an incredibly beautiful thing. One of the most breathtaking things for me about capitalism is that the richest people in the country, you know, the head of Walmart and the head of Ford Motor Company and the head of Target and the head of Microsoft and all these incredibly rich people who are way richer than I am or I'm ever going to be, they spend their days doing what? They spend their days trying to make me happy. That's what they do. There's no doubt about it. They sit around and say, how can we get Lauren to come into our store
and
more
give him
often?
What he wants?
Yeah, how can we have more products he's going to want to buy? How can we get the prices down so he'll like the price and have better quality for him and have him have a good shopping experience so he comes back? I mean, that is what every business has in common. And again, there is no system other than capitalism which forces the wealthiest, most successful people at the absolute top of society to spend all their time worrying about serving others. It's genius. I don't know if you can attribute to one person having thought it up, but it's a genius concept. And with laziness, you know, you can be as lazy as you want to be, but you just pay the price for it. I mean, if I want to stay in bed all day, I can do that. I'll just get poorer and poorer and poorer. Socialism. The socialists are going to make you get out of bed, because the socialists, particularly if you are paying everybody the same amount of money. And by the way, I don't think we looped into this. We were saying off the air that the original version of socialism had everybody making the exact amount of money. Now, mm-hmm. and I'll give
and we've heard that just not too recent past that
yeah and I'll give them credit where due. That at least is a solid principle. Okay, that's what I'm saying socialism doesn't have. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, because they gave up on this. But the original socialists at least had this as a fixed principle which you could take to the bank, at least what they meant. And they said every single solitary person will earn $45,000 a year. If you're the head of General Motors, you make $45,000 a year. If you're cleaning the bathrooms at General Motors, you make $45,000 a year. That was the original version, but the socialists themselves had to give up on that because there are two sticky problems that they didn't think about till later. As is a problem with economics, it's not what you want it to be. It is what it is. You got to live with the rules of nature. It's like Bernie Sanders running for president saying, "I'm going to get rid of gravity." You know, and no, you're not. The gravity's not going anywhere. Okay? Well, neither are the laws of economics going anywhere, because that's what they are. So here's the problem with paying everybody $45,000 a year. Two problems. Number one is you can't let people choose their professions, because the way professions come out right, you know, how many plumbers do we need and how many school teachers do we need? And the way that works is if there's too many people trying to be plumbers and not enough people trying to be school teachers, what happens? The salaries for plumbers goes down. Yeah. This is the market forces. And the salary for school teachers go up until enough people move over to do that. So the salary of everybody in America, not government employees, but in a free market, you know, from a star baseball player to the guy driving the bus to the shoemaker and the candlestick maker, every single person in society, what he earns is determined not arbitrarily. It's determined by supply and demand in the marketplace of employees. Mm-hmm. And so if you say everyone's going to make $45,000 a year, you're going to have a complete disaster, because people will flee unpopular professions, you know, where you have to do like serious hard work like ditch digging and being a plumber, and everyone's going to, you know, I mean, I'll be a poet, okay? I'm just going to stay home and write poetry. I'm writing poetry, okay? You just send my $45,000 to my house, okay? I'll be working on my next poem, all right?
And that also messes up the whole living wage argument, doesn't it?
In the sense of?
If you're going to dictate a low end on the scale, it's going to change the upper scale, which changes the whole price of everything, which means the guy on the bottom might not be able to afford what he could afford before.
Well, there's not going to be a scale according to this. It's just going to be $45,000 a year. So everyone will have the exact same. The problem is you won't produce anything.
Right.
Because people will flee more productive lines of work because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Why am I getting a hard, you know, back-breaking job when everybody gets exactly the same? So we lose the ability to regulate that. And so that's the first problem. And the second problem with paying everybody exactly the same is that you have to bring back, and it sounds funny, but it's totally inevitable, you have to bring in corporal punishment. Because what do you do with employees who are slackers? You're going to tell me they're not going to be any slackers? You're kidding me. There's never been a society in the history of the world that did not have slackers. Okay?
Why don't we know?
What do you do with a guy who shows up late every day and he takes 2.5 hours for lunch and he's goofing off and he's not doing his job? If you cannot change his pay, and presumably you can't fire him, I mean, if you fire him, does he still get the $45,000? Okay. If everyone's getting $45,000 and if you fire him, he still gets his $45,000, he wants to be fired. He's like, please fire me. My $45,000 stays and the work goes. What could be better for me? So the answer is you have to beat people. The only way, if you take away all, because that's what you're doing. If everyone being $45,000, there's no financial incentive. There's no docking your pay for being bad or giving you a raise or a bonus for being good. Then if people are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, you have to whip them. There is, honest to goodness, no serious alternative. It is inevitable if you go down this path. And if it sounds familiar, just think about this for a second. You don't get to choose what you do because the government would have to assign that to you because since everyone's making $45,000, you can't pick your own. Because that you've killed the market forces, now it's your job. You are a street sweeper. It doesn't matter what your dreams are. Okay, and if you don't do a good job, we're going to beat you. If this sounds vaguely familiar, it's called slavery.
Okay. Yeah.
And this was previously invented.
Yeah, you know what I hear in the background? Row.
Slavery is an economic system where you don't get to choose your profession, you don't get to keep the fruit of your labor, and they beat you if you don't do a good job, okay? Well, that socialism suddenly woke up 150 years ago and said, oh my gosh, we just reinvented slavery.
And the people who supposedly know all about it are the ones promoting it now.
That's right.
Ironic.
So that part went out the window, and what the socialists now say, because they never stick to one point for very long, what the socialists now say is, okay, we're not going to pay everyone exactly the same. We're just going to make sure it's fairer.
Oh, yes, okay. Yes, yes.
What does fairer mean? Fairer means that my opinion is going to be imposed on everybody else. So if I'm Barack Obama, and I think that people who make, you know, who are designing, you know, alternative energy systems that don't work should be making, you know, $500,000 a year, and people who make energy systems that actually do work, okay,
people who did coal versus Solyndra.
People who actually do stuff that does accomplish its stated objective, they should only make $50,000 a year because I don't like them. What we're back to see, this is worse. This is worse than what they had before because this is now totally arbitrary. And, you know, when people say, oh, well, Bernie Sanders has this beautiful vision of everyone's going to, you know, be fair. You know, well, you know, lots of people had visions. You know, Hitler had a vision of what, you know, what things ought to be like and what was fair. And in his vision, the Germans were all on top and the Slavs, the Russians were all on the bottom. In fact, that was actually like a law in Nazi Germany that the poorest German had to be richer than the richest, you know, non-German. And obviously, you know, Jews and gypsies and things like that would be killed altogether. And I'm not saying that's the same as Bernie Sanders' vision. Clearly, Bernie Sanders has a different vision, but what they have in common, and this is very important, what they have in common is that they both want to impose their vision on everybody else. I just want to leave people alone and let them follow their own incentives and their own dreams. The socialists, whether they're national socialists in Germany or they're socialists like Bernie Sanders, think that somebody's vision needs to be imposed on everybody else. And since they no longer have even the standard of literal equality, it's totally arbitrary. It's about who the leader is, who he likes, who he doesn't like.
And at the end of the day, it ends badly.
Imagine that.
Huh. Who could have seen that coming?
Yeah.
Row. That's all I could hear when you were talking.
The captain wants to go water skiing.
Nice one. All right, we need to take a quick break. We'll be back with our friend Lawrence Bivak. You know, who would have thought we could have so much fun talking about socialism? You can hear their heads exploding right now. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
I'm going to go review my employment contract.
Whip it.
give the mass a slip. Step on the grid. Break your mama's back. When a problem comes along,
you must rip it
before the cream sets out too long.
You must rip it
when something's going wrong.
You must rip it.
Now whip it into shape. Shape it up. Get straight. Go forward. Move ahead. Try to detach it. It's not too late to whip it. Whip it good.
Move it. On a Sunday afternoon.
Just whip it.
Yep. Yeah, let's go back to the last song. That was amazing. Best one ever, I think. Okay, so we talked about people who are, you know, have these characteristics of greed and laziness that messes up the socialist, I guess, trajectory. I don't know if it's a dream or not. Are we done with that one?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay. What about a third one?
Well, the third one, and it's a really huge, huge economic issue that you rarely hear about. In fact, I'm pretty sure you can get a degree in economics at an American university, and this issue never comes up. But it's one of the biggest issues in the entire study of economics. And that is that we live in a world that is so incredibly complicated. And what I usually tell people is if you think of every single solitary thing that you own, your house, your car, your clothes, your shoes, your cell phone, your computer, your TV set, your furniture, every stick of anything that you own, okay? How much of that would you know how to make yourself? And the answer is nothing.
Zero.
Zero. Much of it you wouldn't have the foggiest idea how to make, and the rest you would make very, very poorly, if at all.
You'd have a hard time even listing all the different things that you own, I think.
But if you look at something really...
getting right down to it.
I mean, kind of simple. Even just, like I was thinking about, like a wedding ring. That's a fairly...
it's not high tech.
No. I mean, even a wedding ring, and let's say it's just a gold band. Okay, if you were a jeweler, you would know how to make it.
Sure.
But they don't go mine the gold.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, even something that simple requires people that they've never met doing something they know nothing about.
That's absolutely right. And so the second stage of this is that nobody knows how to make any of this stuff. Nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Mm-hmm. I guess they could.
Nobody knows how to make anything. There was a famous essay a couple of years ago called iPencil, which was about how nobody knows how to make a pencil. It seems so simple. But the pencil involves dozens of different specialties, from the wood to the graphite to the rubber eraser to the metal band. No one person has all of those skills and could make a pencil by himself. And so when we get into things like, you know, high-tech automobiles and smartphones and things like that, it's incredibly, incredibly complicated. We have an unbelievably complicated economy which involves millions of people in millions of different specialties all kind of working together. And the question is, you know, who in a capitalist system even runs this show? Mm-hmm. Who is the conductor of this orchestra? And the answer is that prices, what we call the price mechanism, which means that prices signal to everybody what everybody else wants and rewards them for delivering it. So if we need more, you know, graphite for pencils or whatever, and there's not enough graphite, the price of graphite goes up. People who mine graphite get that incentive. Okay, let's do more work here because the price is up. We can make more money. And if there's too much, then the price goes down and they stop doing it so much. And so these price signals tell us both as producers and consumers. Remember we were saying before about the school teachers versus the plumbers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the price mechanism tells you which is more in need. And it's worth noting that in capitalism, you are not forced to do anything. If you don't want to be a plumber and you really do want to be a teacher, then you may take a lower salary if that happens to be what's less needed right now, but you can do that. Nobody forces you.
Right.
Okay? But if you respond to the incentives, you'll go to what's actually needed. If there's a plumber shortage, plumber salaries will shoot up and people will flow into that profession. And the same thing with products and goods and services and everything else. And it's an absolute miracle. That one thing coordinates the economic behavior of essentially 7 billion human beings all over the world. The people who made my car don't even speak the same language I speak.
Right.
Doesn't matter. Completely irrelevant.
Right.
They know how to make a car, and I want a car, and I just go to the people who know how to make a car, and they've got my car waiting for me.
And with innovation, things are always changing, and so those industries have to change and train, and people need to learn new things.
And prices change by the second.
Right.
As new things suddenly become valuable and old things become, it never stops moving, not for one second, ever, all over the world. And it runs itself if you allow prices to go to their natural level, because that's what gives everybody the signal to know what to do and how to get the reward by serving the needs of others. What socialism envisions is that one guy is going to have this plan. There's going to be one plan. Okay, you can't have three different plans. If the economy is going to run by a plan, it's only going to be one plan, and which means that one guy has to at least approve it. And if you imagine in a country like the United States, with 350 million people, how many cars and how many toaster ovens and how many tennis shoes and how many pencils and how many cell phones and what they're going to be of this or that, what everyone's going to get paid. A socialist economic plan essentially encompasses the entire economy.
Right.
And could it ever be possible that one guy could possibly even understand a plan like that?
Right.
It's too big for anybody or even a group of people to understand it. And so the reason that people in the Soviet Union had to wait in line for a week to get a roll of toilet paper was not because their leaders were bad. Even though they were. But that's not the point. As I said before, if the socialist leaders are saints, this doesn't change.
Right.
Because there is no way you can efficiently get all of these things to go where they need to go with some plan, like a five-year Stalin plan that stays in place for 5 years when things are changing every 2 seconds. And frankly, you can't even get it right in the first place.
Right.
Forget it lasting for 5 years. It's not possibly going to entertain everybody's needs and desires and wants the way we just take for granted. Granted, which, by the way, is the ultimate secret of socialism, is they pretend that all the good stuff is going to stay with us. Mm-hmm. You're going to be able to, go to the store and buy all your groceries and everything else. We're just going to have socialism. Yeah, tell that to people in Venezuela.
Right.
Okay? You don't keep the good stuff, because the good stuff is created by capitalism. And there was a time, I think, in this country when people actually appreciated, because I think it was actually taught, how capitalism gets us all the good stuff we need. But we were talking about the young people who don't understand this. They assume that the good stuff is just there.
Well, they've never experienced a world without all that stuff.
With a shortage.
We kind of joke about shortage. It, but, a few years ago I was talking to one of my nephews, and it's like, we didn't always have microwave ovens, and we were kind of going through the things in a kitchen that you didn't have. And I said, even when my kids were little, we didn't have, a microwave, and when we were kids, we didn't have this or this or this. And he looks at me with this kind of like all this dawning, like he had no idea, I must be incredibly old, much older than he thought. And he looked at me and he said, well, when you were a kid, did you guys cook on a fire?
Yeah, because if you don't have a microwave, you must have starved.
Did you cook on a fire? And I was like, no. But that's
I told my 7-year-old, and I'm embarrassed to say my 7-year-old now has her own cell phone. It was a family plan, whatever. I'm embarrassed. But anyway, my 7-year-old now has her own cell phone. And I told her, I said, when I was your age, there was one phone for the entire
yes.
family, and it was stuck to the wall. And she said, did it have games?
Did it have games? That's right up there. Did you cook on a fire? But isn't it weird? I mean, as we get older, there are people who are making decisions now, who are voting, I guess, by way of decisions, that's what I mean, who are voting, who have no idea
no.
that all these things didn't used to exist.
And that, in fact, we've been getting richer and richer and richer for 200 years now.
Well, look at our poor people.
Because, again, we've got the richest poor people
ever. Yeah, who would have thought the people who are, quote, poor have cars and cell phones?
Cable.
Cable, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Something like 88% of people below the poverty line have cable.
Yeah, wow. That's poor.
I did not know that.
But poor today, and air conditioning, most of them own one car. Something like 25% of people under the poverty line have two cars. This is, when you understand that 150 years ago, a middle-class American, and not poor, a middle-class American had typically two outfits, one for Sunday and one for the other 6 days of the week. And they lived typically in a house with no running water, no electricity. When the sun went down, things like candles were too expensive for middle. Only rich people had things like that. Oil lamps and candles were for rich people. Middle class people, when the sun went down,
they went to bed.
4:30 in the winter, they went to bed.
Yeah,
the sun. Yeah, what are you going to do in the dark?
Sit in the dark. We go to bed when the sun goes down. If I told you about somebody living like that today, you'd be like, oh my gosh, let's raise some money and help the poor guy out.
Right.
But 150 years ago, that was normal. That was just the way.
We used to work with a fellow who used the analogy of the buggy whip. The buggy whip industry was a booming industry at one time. And today, most folks wouldn't know what a buggy whip was. So times move on, and innovation moves on, and products move on.
Unless the socialists take over.
Unless they were preparing for the rise of socialism.
Yeah.
True.
Then the whips will come back again.
The whips will. They'll rename them.
And they can live in the land that time forgot. All right, we need to take a quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Lawrence Bivak. I cannot believe our time is almost over. Mind-bending. All right, we'll cram in everything we didn't think of before in the last 10 minutes. You can find us online at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
To take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha!
Oh, but it'll be great.
It'll be fine.
Yeah, it'll be perfect. And
you'll never go hungry?
No.
You'll never be bored?
No.
Yeah.
You'll have everything you want.
Always have something.
Oh, no, wait, you'll have everything you need.
That's right.
Everything that
they decide
that,
you need.
Yeah, that what's his name in Vermont, Bernie Sanders, thinks you should have.
Yes. So, for people, how do we tie that up?
Well, we are at a really big turning point in history. And, people say that a lot, but we're really, really at one. In fact, somebody pointed out to me a while ago that America seems about every 60, 70 years to go through a major turning point, whether it's the Founding Fathers, and then you get the Civil War, and then you get, the Great Depression and the New Deal, and here we are in the early 21st century, and it's a huge turning point. The country is very, very divided. And you see that, we've had for the last, 6, 7, 8, 9 presidential elections, they've been very close, all of them. It goes one way, it goes the other way. It's a point or two. Ronald Reagan used to get landslides. We don't get landslides anymore because the country is so closely divided. And you have got a huge and powerful movement that frankly is socialist. And the first thing we need to understand is that it's wrong. Their economic idea is simply mistaken, and as good-hearted and as positive as their intentions might be, it doesn't work. And the second thing is that it's very, very, very dangerous. Socialism destroys constitutional limited government. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that brings society to an end. In Road to Serfdom, Friedrich Hayek famously says that it's Germany's fate we're in danger of following. And he's writing this when Hitler is actually in power. Okay? He's saying we in the, and by we, he meant the United States and Britain, are in danger of going down the same road that Germany went down that led to Hitler, and it's a road that's paved with socialism. And finally, that the facts are on our side. Anyone who seriously and objectively looks at the history of these experiments in socialism and the logic of economics understands why capitalism is indispensable. You cannot simply just wish it away and imagine, you know, you can make human life work better than it does. Famous historian, his name is slipping my mind at the minute, but he says, he talks about the socialists, he said, you know, they promised to make heaven on earth, and instead they paved the way to a good many hells. And that's what we've seen throughout the 20th century. Paul Johnson, sorry, it came to me, was the historian. That's what Paul Johnson says about the various socialists of the 20th century who managed to succeed. And we can really only hope that they fail. This is the deciding point where we're going to go one way or the other.
Yeah, well, if you take away people's ability to chart their own path, create, and be independent, I think it's pretty clear what's going to happen.
Well, it's interesting because I do remember reading that essay, iPencil. I added it to the website because I always add the things we talk about in case somebody's, you know, driving while they're hearing the show or something. And skip to the end. I don't know, because I always skip to the end. I always read the conclusion first. And the last paragraph.
You're not a big mystery novel fan, I take it.
We'll skip to the end. I used to give a test to my class, and the last question on the test was, don't do the test. So I always knew who were people like me, the kid who looked up with a big smile on their face, and I'm like, shh, don't tell. The final paragraph says, the lesson I have to teach is this, leave all creative energies uninhibited. Merely organize society to act in harmony with this lesson. Let society's legal apparatus remove all obstacles the best it can. Permit these creative know-hows freely to flow. Have faith that free men and women will respond to the invisible hand. This faith will be confirmed. I, Pencil, seemingly simple, though I am, offer the miracle of my creation as testimony that this is a practical faith, as practical as the sun, the rain, the cedar tree, and the good earth. And interesting, and that was 1958 in the issue of the Freeman when he first published that.
And the line about the invisible hand, of course, is Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations, who says that there's the invisible hand of the market pushes you to help your fellow man, even when you're only trying to pursue your own goals.
Yeah, so a worthy read. Now, he was born in 1898 and lived in 1983, so he saw a tremendous amount of that change and some of the precursor of what we're doing now. Anyway, very good to have you today. Thanks so much popping over on your way from Massachusetts. And if you guys want to have Lauren speak to your group, best to find you on the website?
Sure. Yeah, drtruthbooks.com. drtruthbooks.com.
Fabulous. And you'll be coming to a city near them at any time. So you can't email him too soon so he can make plans. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll be back with another great topic next week. This has been We the People Radio. You can join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
We'll have to have Lauren back soon.
Exactly, because we always had such a fun time. And very timely this particular round.
Thanks, everybody.
Much appreciated.
This is KCNR Shasta Redding.